Bob James is a legend. He's had a life in music. He's still at it. He has more awards than you can count, although we can easily count his two Grammys among them. And he is a jazz man to his many fans. And for them, his latest big work might be something of a surprise. Bob's about to give the American premiere of his first piano concerto, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, Bob, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Kate, thank you for having me. I love Interlaken. I get a great feeling every time I drive down that road, see all the signs that music lives here, and makes me happy that I live in this area.
You've had a life in jazz. You've had a life in music, and you were discovered by Quincy Jones, right?
Well, I was real lucky. I was in college at the end of my college days in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan, and frankly, I was really into avant-garde music at that time. I mean, the really avant-garde stuff that was way out on the fringe. Avant-garde classical composers looked to us to perform their music because we were willing to be brave and take all kinds of risks and play crazy stuff. And so I really wasn't thinking too much about the legitimacy of going to a jazz festival, but I decided to compete in Notre Dame where they had a collegiate jazz festival. And amazingly, coincidentally, two of the judges were Henry Mancini, for one, and Quincy Jones, for the other.
Wow.
So it's pretty awesome opportunity to get an introduction. And so we prevailed at the festival. We won. And in addition to winning the prizes at the festival, individually and collectively, my trio, Quincy, who was just freshly in an A&R job with Mercury Records, signed me to do my first record.
And then from there, though, your jazz career just really took off. And I think in a lot of ways, for instance, your name is synonymous with smooth jazz. Although, what is smooth jazz? What constitutes smooth jazz?
Well, unfortunately, it's a kind of a moniker that we got stuck with. It certainly didn't come, it wasn't a phrase that came out of us. It came out of the radio business, I guess, and the need to put things in a category. Some radio stations really wanted to appeal to people who wanted smooth music. And so the term smooth jazz was born. If we had a record that had 10 tunes on it, maybe three or four of them were smooth or slower or whatever. But they didn't choose the rough ones. They chose the smooth ones. And because of the fact that I had success with those smooth cuts from my jazz records, I was one of the artists that got associated with the label Smooth Jazz. And it's had a mixed thing for me. I'm very, very happy when my music gets played, whether it's smooth or rough. And if they play the smooth stuff, that makes me happy too. But I would prefer, if I was going to try to describe what I do, that it would be more full service. And I like playing rough some of the time.
You've got some hits that are instantly recognizable by people everywhere. For instance, Angela, arguably your biggest hit.
Yes.
That was the theme to Taxi. And it gets, you know, you hear it and you instantly know it.
Whenever I'm playing for fun for people, I make an announcement that I'm going to play a medley of my hit. So, and I don't mind saying that, you know, if you're only going to get one, and who knows, maybe I'll have more. And I've had some others that were successful, but certainly the Taxi theme took me a lot further and got heard by many, many, many millions more people because the series was so successful. And so they contacted me out of the blue. I had no idea. I didn't audition for it.
Wow.
Nothing like that. It just happened. And we came up with this library kind of approach, which was very different at that time because most of the people who were doing music were doing it right to picture and to a clock and with click tracks and everything, specific timings and all of that. And throughout the history of the series, over the next 5 or 6 years, we never did that at all. And as a matter of fact, I never once or twice looked at footage. But other than that, I just made music, and their music editor and the producer chose what they liked. the opening shot in the series was this taxi at dusk going over the bridge. And it was not a hustle and bustle, on Broadway kind of a theme.
Now, but you had another really huge hit, which is interesting because it's recognizable for different reasons. So we're talking about Nautilus now. You know, here it is.
But really, it's a bass line that the hip-hop people...
Yes. And the same thing happened with Take Me to the Mardi Gras. You had the beginning of that, and then that small sample shows up everywhere. You should know how to work that. So... But again, you created accidentally, I guess, the definitive backbeats for a lot of hip hop. And I understand the mixed feelings there about that's yours. But were you still kind of excited to hear it the first time?
Well, sure. Kind of a youthful thing, you know, makes me feel younger. But I don't know why. I don't know why they chose it. But it just it happened. And now there's something like 900 versions of it that
something
are available
like
one way or another. It's crazy.
So you have this, again, a life of music. You have a huge, incredible body of music. What brought you to say that a piano concerto was the next thing to do for you?
Well, I was in Japan, actually, and I had been asked to contribute some music to help from the recovery efforts after the tsunami of 2011. And... a wonderful producer, a lady named Atsuko Yashima, who was an executive producer for NHK, the public television in Japan, had a vision that I could help based upon the music that I did. And so I made this trip to the area, to the Iwate region, that had been hit the most severely after the tsunami. And I played at a jazz festival. And as it turned out, I was the only American jazz artist that went there. So symbolically, I became somebody who had the courage to go and who believed in telling the rest of the world about how difficult the struggle was going to be. And during that time, I visited a town called Ofanato that had basically been wiped out. A lot of the pictures that you saw in the news of the tsunami just coming in and enveloping the whole town came from there. And at that same time, I'm giving you a long answer for how the concerto started, but Miss Yashima was talking to me a lot about what other dreams that I had in terms of music. And I started to talk about orchestra and how I didn't know exactly what kind of piece I wanted to write, but I wanted to write something for a large orchestra. One thing led to another. Among other things, she was ambitious enough to say, if you write it, I'll get it played for
you,
which is what any composer wants with a large orchestral piece, because it's not that easy to get them performed. And I ended up settling on the piano concerto format, partially because I could take advantage of my artist reputation to help put people in the seats and be in a little bit more control of it, at least, which I at that time I thought was a good idea. Now I'm not so sure it's a good idea. I wish I could sit out in the audience instead of having to play it myself. But so I settled in on the piano concerto format, and along the way, over period of about 2 years of working on writing it, it became very symbolic to me, representing the experience that I had over there in Japan, my love of the Japanese culture, my appreciation for the difficulties that happen after a tragedy. And so my three movements of the concerto are all symbolically titled. The one is actually, the first movement is actually called Ofonato. That's where the impetus for the concerto came originally for me. Second movement I call Aftermath because it's a slow movement in conventional concerto form. It grew out of my feeling of lonely, empty desolation when I first stood on the street. They took me to the street that had been completely wiped out. Every building had just been demolished. And when I was there, it was 6 months after the tsunami, so it was just quiet. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. There was a few little flowers that started to grow up, weeds, and you could see birds flying by. But other than that, there was this desolate, lonely feeling.
So let's hear some so we can get an idea of now what this is all going to sound like. Bob James, thank you so much for being here today.
Kate, thank you very much for having that wonderful smile even after all those mistakes that I made.
Which nobody knows about but you, Bob.